You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told federal lawmakers last week that the U.S. will sell $8 billion worth of arms and weapons to countries including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Congress has not given its approval for that move, and lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have objected to the sale. However, President Trump, citing a security threat from Iran, invoked an emergency authority to proceed with the deal. Our next guest joins us to talk about the president's decision to sidestep Congress and what it could mean in the Middle East. Ali Abutalabi is a professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire. Ali, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, what were your initial reactions to this decision from the White House?
Well, you have to question the policy. Saudi Arabia, of course, has been engaged in a war in Yemen since 2015. And we know Yemen is a horrific situation where half of the population is on the verge of starvation. And there is no justification to continue selling arms to Saudi Arabia. Congress is against it. Some of our European allies are against it, and they are not selling arms to Saudis. So the question is, why are we doing this? And Saudi Arabia really is fourth or fifth in the world in terms of the amount of money they spend on defense. And they engage in a war in Yemen, which is one of the poorest Arab states, with horrific consequences. So we have to question that policy.
The argument has been from the White House and from the Secretary of State that this help is needed for Saudi Arabia to help balance the threat from Iran in Yemen and elsewhere in the region. What do you say to that?
Well, Iran spent about $15 billion a year on its defense. While Saudi Arabia, again, is more than 80, perhaps, billion dollars, if not more. Iran is being accused of using some of these proxies, whether it's in Iraq or Yemen, as to kind of agitate Saudi Arabia. There may be certain truth to that, but claiming that Iran has threatened U.S. position and interest in the region without providing any substantive truth is rather dubious proposition. Remember, we still are have the fresh memory from Iraq war, how basically the information was manipulated to justify invasion of Iraq in 2003. So we have to question if there are imminent threat against U.S. Interests in the region, we need to see some evidence. And, of course, the administration cannot provide for that. There were some rumors about there was actually one Katyusha fired in Iraq by one of the militias in Iraq toward the American embassy, so to speak, with zero casualties. And there could be an act done by some of the militias in Iraq, regardless of what Iran wants or not. It is possible, should there be a conflict, unfortunately, between the United States and Iran, Iran would use some of these proxies to counter U.S. attack. That might be a scenario. But to argue that we need to send additional troops and we need to send more arms to Saudi Arabia in order to counter Iran is a far cry from the truth.
Ali Abutalabi is with us, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire. We're talking about an agreement from the White House to provide arms to Saudi Arabia and other countries in the Middle East without the approval of Congress. Now, Ali, what role does Congress usually play in these kind of deals?
Well, you know, we sell a lot of arms on annual basis. For example, last year, more than $192 billion worth of arms were sold by the United States. But they are fundamentally categorized at foreign military sales, which is done by the United States government and its supervision, so to speak. And that came to about $55 billion a year last year. But the lion's share of that, almost about $137 billion, was sold as direct commercial sales. Direct commercial sales allow American companies to directly negotiate with other countries to sell their arms without much of a supervision. So arms is a big industry. As I said, $192 billion last year. And the year before that was $170 billion. It's a big money earner, and also it creates some jobs at home. But selling $55 billion, you know, in terms of where government actually is involved in terms of foreign military sales, that's still a substantial amount of money. So we are basically number one in the world in terms of arms transfer. Last year, we sold about 38% of total world arms transfers. And, of course, the Russians followed us by about 22%. We understand if some people argue about arms transfer in terms of money earners, but you have to question, particularly when it comes to sensitive countries like Saudi Arabia, since they are engaged in a war with Yemen, and the possibility of war with Iran perhaps is looming. We have to question the wisdom of such arms transfer. In a way, bringing more arms to the region, it could increase the probability of the usage of arms. So when it comes to direct the foreign military sales, Congress has all the right to question that. Since they have the power of the purse, and they are a branch of government, they have to question the executive branch and the wisdom of the policy.
Can you talk more about the war in Yemen and the humanitarian impact that has had?
Well, you know, Yemen, along with many other Arab states, back in 2011, had the Arab Spring movement, so to speak. And Yemenis, since 2011, have been trying to have a better life for themselves through a more representative government. And because the last dictator of Yemen was there for about 30 years or so, and he was overthrown. And again, before he was overthrown, his vice president, who's currently technically the remnant of the last regime, claimed to be the legitimate government. While at the same time, Yemen, in the northern part of Yemen, the Houthi minorities that have taken arms against this defunct government and started the fight since about 2013. And Saudi Arabia basically is seeing the Houthis, who are a minority Shia in Yemen, as a threat to his own national security. They intervened in Yemen in 2015, especially when the United States signed the nuclear agreement with Iran. They increasingly became more involved in Yemen. Yemen, as I said, is a very poor Arab country with poor limited number of targets. So Saudis, they have been basically destroying the infrastructure. And that has led to food insecurity, lack of water, the spread of diseases, and even United Nations is not able to do all it can do. And major Yemeni ports are being occupied by pro-Saudi forces. And in recent time, through an agreement, some of the rebels, so to speak, and the Houthis and remnants of the Yemen government or military, they decided to withdraw from the ports, provided that the United Nations increases food aid to the people who are in need. In short, Yemen is a mess. You're talking about, as I said, about half of the population are being food insecure, with a good number of people on the verge of starvation. The perpetuation of this war should really lead to outcry by the international community. But unfortunately, we don't see much of that. And we don't see much of that perhaps primarily because the threat from Iran has been hyped up to the security of Saudi Arabia or Israel, for that matter. And with the increased U.S. military pressure and naval presence in the Persian Gulf, we've kind of gone from a bad situation to a worse situation. We bring in more weapons, whereby more aid is needed.
The Saudis and others have said that the Houthis in Yemen are, in effect, proxies of Iran. Is that fair?
I think the Iranian connection to Houthis is over-exaggerated. There is no mind that Iran has an interest to give aid to Houthis, including some arms perhaps, to give Saudis a hard time, so to speak. But let's say Iran is not part of the equation tomorrow. The fact remains that Yemen has problem. Yemen was already divided as a divided country in the 1960s. It was reunited in the 1990s. And since then, again, we've had this defunct regime running the government, the countries, and the Houthi minorities, who are really about perhaps 35, maybe more percentage of the population, they were under tremendous pressure. When they took arm, and they moved towards Sana'a, the capital, then everything got out of hand. What is needed in Yemen, of course, is reconciliation, establishment of a new government, independent government, and perhaps with even some Arab state money for Yemen to rebuild itself. War is not going to go anywhere. Yemenis have proven themselves to be resilient, a fundamental tribal environment. But since 2011, since the dawn of Arab Spring, Yemen has been crying for more responsible government and better situation for Yemeni people. So regardless of Iran, and Yemen had this issue, Iran, of course, would use Yemen if they could in order to counterattack American pressure on Iran. But to argue that what's going on in Yemen is a proxy war and Iranians are putting weapons there is a fallacy. This is not true. The arms transfer from Iran is very limited. Again, whatever evidence that we have, it does not show that Iran is heavily involved in Yemen. But unfortunately, Yemen has become a scapegoat for Iranian threat when it comes to Saudi Arabia.
Ali Aboutalibi is with us, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire. He's with us to talk about the recent news that the White House will finalize an $8 billion arms sale to Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and other Middle Eastern countries. The White House is citing an emergency power to sidestep Congress in order to make the sale, citing Iran as a security threat in the region. We'll go to a caller now. Joyce is with us in Wausau. Joyce, hi. Joyce, do we have you? We don't have Joyce. We'll see if we get. Oh, here she is. Joyce, hi.
Hi, hello.
Good. What did you want to bring up, Joyce?
I have friends that live in Yemen, as well as Yemenis that have gotten out of the country are living in Great Britain. And from the viewpoint of these people who are some of the very, very best young people, at any rate, from their viewpoint and from everything that I've heard, and I try to keep up on the news over there, what the Saudis are doing is they are totally destroying the infrastructure, which means the roads, the airports, the ports themselves are, you know, being taken over by the Saudis, so that the people cannot survive. They are starving. And the medical supplies, Doctors Without Borders, things like that, they're just not able to keep up with everything that has happened because of the bombing of the country. And they may say, oh, well, they're, you know, bombing the Houthis or whatever, but in effect, what they're doing is bombing to destroy the infrastructure of the country. I truly do not believe Iran really cares that much. I mean, sure, they're going to cheer on the Houthis because of what they're doing. But in effect, it's the people that are paying for this and the cholera and the starvation that's going on is atrocious. We should not be supporting this.
Joyce, thanks for the call. Ali, your thoughts on the anecdotes that Joyce shared and her thoughts?
Well, I think she's right on the money. I mean, you know, the number of people, you're talking about millions. Just imagine for a second if these people were Christians, so to speak. Let's just be honest about this. Would there be little attention paid as such right now, or would there be more outrageous or outrage coming from the West? You know, it doesn't matter. You know, in the end, we are humans. And the Yemenis got really themselves bucked in a very bad situation. And they are very poor. They don't have any external support. They are being blockaded. And even the United Nations cannot do its job. And all we are doing it in the name of Saudi war against the Houthis. I think this is way overblown in terms of the power of the Houthis or what have you. In the end, you need some kind of settlements. But let's say, God forbid, there's going to be escalation of war in Yemen. Saudi Arabia is not going to, or if the Saudi Arabia had a conflict with Iran, Saudi Arabia will not fight a war against Iran on its own. They would like, obviously, to drag Iran, United States, into that such a war. So to argue that another $8 billion going to Saudi Arabia is going to make him somehow stronger, that's a ridiculous argument. Saudi Arabia, in about 2017, they kind of agreed in two different agreements with the United States to purchase $287 billion. $287 billion. Saudi Arabia is flooded with weapons. So it's not just the weapons they need. They need a better policy. They need better foreign policy makers. They need a more responsible government in order to make better policy decisions for them. So again, arms transfer does not going to make Saudi Arabia more secure because they're already flooded with weapons. But instead, what it does is scares Iranians and in the region, who basically says Americans are having their naval ships here, their bases all over in Bahrain, in Qatar, in Kuwait, and of course in Oman, and they are geared at regime change. Although President Trump says we are not. But nevertheless, the perception from Tehran is that we are being surrounded in a way by American troops. And of course, America also has troops present in Afghanistan and Iraq. So Iranians feel insecure. And that, again, could lead more tension. And God forbid that tension could lead to accidental firing or some kind of a false flag situation. And that could escalate into a war, which would really not serve the U.S. interests, neither would serve Iran's interests. But unfortunately, as been repeatedly said, it would serve the interests of Saudi Arabia, Israel, and Bahrain, and United Arab Emirates to a large extent, because these are the major forces promoting the whole notion of a war against Iran. You've heard this so many times at the expense of repeating myself. But people like John Bolton or Mike Pompeo, they are not interested in any diplomatic solution when it comes to Iran. And as such, as long as we have such urgency to start a new war front in Iran, Saudi Arabia would push for that. So the better solution, of course, is, I would get out of John Bolton tomorrow if I were President Donald Trump. You need to have a more sound diplomatic approach. Iranians are under a lot of pressure. The economy is under a lot of pressure. There always can be back channel, and there could be already some at work. But some kind of solution can come out of this. We could de-escalate Yemen. We could pour aid there. And, of course, in the end, diplomacy and international law are the best tools that we have in our disposal to avoid further conflict.
Joyce, thanks for that call. Ali, in our last minute or so, what would you want to see happen in the short run in Yemen to de-escalate and to solve this horrible humanitarian situation?
Well, first of all, we need to have a ceasefire. Some of the rebels have withdrawn from the ports in Yemen, like Port of Hadida. The Saudi forces, they should also pull away. There should be UN peacekeepers troops stationed. Could be the formation of a new government. And from there on, we need to have Saudi money or Arab rich countries in the Persian Gulf money to help with Yemen to recover its from this devastated war. There is no fundamental reason that Iran can be or should be seen as a threat or Saudi Arabia's enemy. One last thing I want to emphasize that you have to question to what extent Saudi policy represent the will of the Saudi people. I think most Saudi themselves, they feel for what's going on in Yemen. And they are not necessarily in favor of what the government is doing in Yemen. I don't think anybody in sound mind would kind of acknowledge and would be okay with bombing innocent people and pushing them to starvation.
Ali, thanks for joining us today.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you.
Ali Aboutalibi is a professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire. He joins today to talk about the recent announcement that the U.S. will sell Middle Eastern countries, including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, weapons to the tune of $8 billion, citing an emergency power that allows them to do that without congressional approval.